Good, very good. I really appreciate what Garrett had to say in his prayer, everything that he said. But about being able to put things aside and just focus on what we're doing, being able to come and just worship and think about God and focus on God and just really just with a full attention and totally be able to worship and think about those things and be able to just think about you and not think about myself, but just to come and think about you and what I can do for you and how I can help you. But I have to confess to you that it's increasingly difficult for me to, at any time, including at church, to just put things aside. That gets harder and harder for me to do. Part of it is my own struggle, my own failure, my own weakness. Obviously, it's always sort of get away from that and just think about maybe what I ought to be thinking about. But a lot of it is just the world. Just the world doing what the world does. I'm just so frustrated with it and so tired of it. And it just seems like that the older I get, the more I deal with frustration and anger and sadness. And maybe I'm just becoming a grumpy old man. Look, that's entirely possible. You know, I'm about there, if I'm not there already, where you get grumpy. And I don't yet care that kids get on my lawn, but I can see that coming. I know it's on the way. And I just, the first time that I yell out my door, get off my lawn, it's going to be a sad day for me. But I can see it in the future. Of course, Aubrey's been doing it for 20 years, so that's no real big thing there. But the world is just so... The mockery that God's people and the truth, the Bible and the church and things that are good, the mockery that people make of those things, the media, it's entirely given over to godlessness and promoting things that just are against everything that God desires. Immorality is glorified and flaunted. Celebrities, pundits, and influencers all seem to be on the side of wickedness. Hatred and violence toward innocent people, but targeting the people of God. It's such a frustrating time, and it's so easy to be angry and to be worried and to be afraid. What do we do about that? Because sometimes I just think that I just can't stand it anymore. I just think it's just more than I can take. And I just wonder what we do about that. Well, this morning we're going to be in Psalm 37. And the good news is, there's a lot of good news. A lot of times we just focus on the bad news because that's just how we are. But there's a lot of good news. And part of the good news is that everything I have just described is... not new. Grammatically, that was a horrible sentence. Nothing that I have just described is new. Everything that I have just said has been around for a long time, very long time. If you go back to the book of Revelation, where the people of God were being killed by the government for their faith, and they're crying out, "How long, O Lord? How long do we have to put up with this?" And you go farther back to the prophets who ask God the same thing. How long are we going to have to endure this? And you go all the way back to King David, who said, "How long? Why do you wait? What's going on?" Over and over and over. It's important for us to get some answers about how we deal with such a frustrating world. And so we're going to look at Psalm 37, verses 7 through 11. I hope you turn there because we're going to read that in just a minute. And what the psalmist is going to tell us is, as we look at this frustrating, maddening, godless, dark world, there's some things we don't need to be doing. He said, don't be doing some things because, and then he's going to say, not just to not be, but he's going to say, do be, and then he's going to say, do be, do be, do. No, he's not. He's not going to say that. I mean, he's not. I just couldn't help that. The whole time I was doing the outline, I just kept going, dooby, dooby, doo, dooby, dooby, doo. He's not going to do that. He's going to say because. That's what he's going to do actually. So he's going to say to us, don't be doing these things because. Then he's going to say, do be doing these things because. And I want you to look for that. So let's read Psalm 37 and verses 7 through 11. And I want you to look for these things. What are we not supposed to do in the face of a very frustrating world? What are we not supposed to do and why? What are we supposed to do and why? See if you can answer those questions. Psalm 37 and verse 7. Rest in the Lord and wait patiently for Him. Do not fret because of him who prospers in his way, because of the man who carries out wicked schemes. Cease from anger and forsake wrath. Do not fret. It leads only to evil doing. For evildoers will be cut off. But those who wait for the Lord, they will inherit the land. Yet a little while, and the wicked man will be no more. And you will look carefully for his place, and he will not be there. But the humble will inherit the land and will delight themselves in abundant prosperity. So what did you see? When it comes to the things that we don't need to be doing, when he says you look at the world and wicked people are getting away with things, they're flaunting it, they're blatant about it, they're haughty about it, they're mocking what's good, hating what's good, violent against, what do you do about that? What do you not do about? What should you not do? What does he say? There's two things that he says you should not do. Did you see what they are? The first thing he says is don't fret, which is just sort of an old way of saying don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. The second thing, so that thing I think is no big surprise. Worry is natural in a world that's gone off the rails. But the second thing he says is don't be angry about it. Now, maybe you don't deal with this. Maybe you do. I do. And so when we get to that point, if you're like, dude, what are you angry about? I'm not angry. Oh, then you can tune out. But I think I'm not alone in that. That watching blatant wickedness and mockery of what's good ticks me off. And maybe it does you too. And so we'll see what he has to say about that. Let's begin with what he says about worry. So he says, don't be worried. Don't be worried about what's going on in the world. I think that involves several things. First of all, it involves thoughts that are worried thoughts. Thoughts like, you know, there's no penalty for evil. People do bad and just get away with it. And nobody ever holds them accountable. There's no justice. There's no fairness. They just do it and get away with it. Or we think, on the flip side, there's no reward for goodness. Nobody gets a benefit for doing good. Everybody who does good has it worse than other people. And so we think that way. Or we begin to think, God's left the building. Or maybe he was never there to begin with. Maybe all that stuff that I heard about and you may have heard about growing up in Bible class, the flood and Israel and Goliath and all that stuff, maybe there's nothing to that after all. Or maybe you think if you can't beat them, join them. They're all doing the wrong thing and getting away with it. In fact, they seem to be better off than I am. Why not just do what they do? These are the kind of thoughts that we can have as we're worried and the kind of feelings that we can have. Maybe we're envious. You may not want to admit it. You don't have to. That's okay. God knows. We don't have to know. But maybe you're envious. You're like, man, I kind of wish I was doing that. Look what they get from that. Maybe you actually begin to feel hatred for people who are on the other side, or you're bitter because of the way things are going, or you're scared about where it's all going to end up. Where are we going to end up? How is this going to end up? What's our country going to be like? What's security and safety? Is there going to be any? Is there going to be anything that's normal ever again? And you're scared. And you begin to doubt. And you begin to feel anxious about the way the world is. And then maybe you do some things in your worry. You begin to reciprocate. You begin to talk to unbelievers the way they talk to you or about you. You begin to treat them the way they're treating you. You begin to have an attitude toward them and to say things. Maybe you use hateful speech. Maybe you say things or post things that are really not very kind. They're really not loving at all. Maybe you actually begin to engage in revenge, or you begin to compromise your faith, or you just give up altogether. What do every single one of those things have in common? All of those worried thoughts, all of those worried feelings, all of those worried actions, what do they all, you know, they all have in common? All of those worried thoughts, it's all sin. All of it. It's all sin. It's all a violation of God's will. It's all off limits. For a, you know, all those worried feelings, you say, well, you can't help the way you feel. Feelings are normal and okay. Feelings are natural. You feel the way you feel and you can't help it. It's all sin. All of it. Every bit of it is sin. And those actions that we might take toward other people, those ways that we begin to treat other people because of the way they're acting, all sin, all of it. It's all sinful. All of it. And so this is why he tells us you've got to be careful about that worry, because it will make you sin. What about the anger? He says to us in Psalm 37 and verse 8, look at what he says. Cease from anger and forsake wrath. Now, I know what you're thinking, because it's what I always think, and we're going to talk about it. But somebody might say, wait a minute, isn't anger natural? Isn't anger just part of being a human? Isn't anger just something that all of us deal with? I mean, isn't anger, God gets angry, the Father gets angry, the Son gets angry. Isn't anger just part of our divine image? God made us in His image. He gets mad. We get mad. It's all good. Is that the way we're supposed to look at it? Yes, anger is natural. There is no question that anger is a natural and God-created emotion. But it's also dangerous. Anger is extremely dangerous. I would challenge you to make a list of all of the things that you have ever done in anger in two lists. One the good things and one the bad things. And which list is longer? Make a list of all the things you've ever done because you were angry and see which list is longer. The good stuff or the bad stuff? Because anger is dangerous. It's dangerous. Is anger really okay? Well, let's look at what the Bible says about anger. You know, in the Old Testament, there are three examples of good anger. In the Old Testament, there are three examples of good anger. Moses was angry at the sin of Israel. Saul was angry at Israel's enemies. And Jonathan was angry at the sin of Saul. So there's three times in the Old Testament where anger is what we would call righteous anger. But notice a couple of those people on that list. Was Moses' anger always righteous? Did Moses ever act unrighteously in his anger? Did Moses impetuously strike a rock when he was supposed to what? Speak to it? Have you ever struck something because you were angry? You ever struck somebody because you were angry? Because anger is dangerous. And yes, Moses was righteously angry, but he was also unrighteously angry. And the Bible says he was the most humble man in the world. Saul was angry righteously against the enemies of Israel. But later he was angry because he was jealous and it became unrighteous. That's the Old Testament. Now I want to share with you almost every example of anger in the New Testament. Almost. There's one that's not included. because it's impossible to tell if it's a good anger or a bad anger. It's Herod in Acts 12. You can look at it yourself. But this is almost every example of anger in the New Testament. And I want to ask you, are they good or bad? The older brother of the prodigal son was angry because of the party that his father threw for the prodigal. Was that good or bad? The Nazarenes were angry at the teaching of Jesus. Good or bad? The Sanhedrin was angry at the apostles for their teaching. Good or bad? The synagogue was angry at Stephen for his teaching. Good or bad? The Ephesians were angry at Paul for his teaching. Good or bad? In every single instance, the anger was unrighteous and ungodly. You say, well, yeah, but I mean, obviously all of those. I mean, surely there were some other, there are no other examples of anger in the New Testament. Outside of Jesus, there are no others. When people got mad in the New Testament, that's when they got mad. And that's why they were mad. Every example of anger, save one, in the New Testament, that's just anybody not named Jesus, is unrighteous anger. And what that ought to tell us is that anger is dangerous. Now, does that mean that anger is terrible? That anger is horrible? That anger should completely be eliminated? No, because anger is a lot like lighter fluid. You ever use this stuff? You ever use lighter fluid? All right, what do you use it for? So you're going to grill out, or your wife is at my house. You're going to grill out, so you put the charcoal in the grill, or however you do it. That's how we do it, because we're poor. No, I'm kidding, we're not. But we put charcoal in the grill, and then you what? You take the, they're used to it, they probably don't have to anymore, but you take the lighter fluid, and what do? You douse the charcoal with lighter fluid, and then you light it, and it catches on fire. Now, do you take the lighter fluid and just continue to soak the fire? Jeffrey says yes. Troy, I would caution you against letting Jeffrey around an open flame. But do you take the lighter fluid and continue to shoot it into the fire? No, because if you did, what would happen? It would absolutely blow up, and it would scorch your chicken and burn your steak and probably burn your house down. Because lighter fluid is great to start a fire, but it's not something you want to keep pouring on the fire, because it will destroy everything. Anger is exactly the same way. Anger is an appropriate initial motivator. Should sin make you angry? Sure. Should unrighteousness, injustice? Yes, those should make you angry, but you should not keep it. Anger is a great initial motivator, but a hazardous constant companion. You say, I'm going to stay angry all the time. I'm ticked off about the way the world is, and I'm going to hang on to that anger. Even Paul, who is our, he gave us the justification, didn't he? For being angry. Paul gave us the okay. This is what we always do. Well, Paul said, be angry and do not sin. That proves that not all anger is a sin. So I can be angry. Leave me alone and let me be angry. But that's not all he said. Right? Can we keep going? He said, do not let the sun go down on your anger. You can't just hang on to it. You can't just keep it. You can't get angry and then hang on to it and keep living. You just can't. That's not what Paul said. He said, if you do, you're giving the devil an opportunity. And then later in that passage, Paul said, let all wrath and anger be put away from you. Get rid of it. Don't hold it. Put it away. Anger's dangerous. Even anger at the world that we live in and the craziness that's going on around us, even that anger is dangerous. Now, the reason that you and I cannot be worried and not be angry, the reason that we don't have to feel that way, is because justice is coming. Because he says that all evildoers will be cut off. That means eliminated. That means judged, punished, and removed. So there's coming a time when all evildoers will be eliminated. What that means is, for you and me, that you and I as believers can relax, but we better be careful. We can relax. We don't have to worry. We don't have to be ticked off, but we need to be careful. Here's what that means for us. God's justice is a comfort for us. The justice of God should comfort the believer, because every time you see evil being successful, understand whoever's succeeding by it is also paying for it. Wickedness does not come free. A person who succeeds in evil is paying a high price. You just can't see it. But it's there. When evil is successful, the success is illusory. It's an illusion. It's not real. And whatever might be there is temporary. It's not going to last. It's not going to keep going. It's not going to be permanent. But listen, this also needs to be a warning to us. Notice again what he said. In verse 8, he said, cease from anger because it leads to evil doing. Then in verse 9, he said, evildoers will be cut off. Don't miss that connection. The evildoers in verse 9 are not just unbelievers. They're believers who don't handle things well. It's you and me. We also can be cut off because we don't handle ourselves well, and we need to be patient because God's justice is coming, but we don't know when. Could be today. Could be tomorrow. Could be 1,000 years from now. The justice of God is coming. We do not know when. So we have to be patient. Next week, we're going to finish up this series that we've done on trusting God, a God that we cannot see. And we're going to talk about another psalm, Psalm 130, that tells us how to wait for God to act without losing our faith. Before we do that and sing the song of invitation that Aubrey announced, just want to wrap up by noticing one more time what he says about what we're supposed to do. In verse 7 of Psalm 37, he says, rest in the Lord and wait patiently. That is the opposite of worry and anger. If you are worried, you're not resting, right? You know that, right? You think about when you're worried. Are you able to rest? Are you able to sleep? Are you able to relax? Are you able to enjoy anything? No, because you're worried. And then when you're angry, it's even worse. I'm so ticked off. I'm so angry. I can't sit still. I can't see straight. I can't get anything done. I'm distracted. But you can't rest because you're angry. It's the complete opposite. But we can rest because we know that justice is certain. But listen, here's what we got to be careful about. We've got to be careful about having a feeling of glee and joy about the judgment of God. We can't go there. We can't be that way. We can't be those people who love to see the downfall of people who are wrong. The Bible itself talks about that 4 or 5 different places. It is a sin to rejoice at the downfall of an enemy. While we are resting and waiting patiently for the justice of the Lord, we must extend grace and mercy, because it is only by His grace and mercy that we're not going to be judged when everybody else is. That justice that's coming should have been coming for you. And it should have been coming for me. And the only reason it isn't is not because I'm good. It's not because I'm right. It's not because I'm awesome. Okay, a little awesome. It's not because that I've got everything figured out. It's because of 2 things, grace and mercy. And I've got to extend that to everybody else, even as I wait for the judgment of God. What is not the opposite of resting and waiting is being active and being bold. That is not the opposite of waiting. In other words, waiting doesn't mean sit at home and don't do anything and just wait for the Lord to handle it. Because what you and I are supposed to be doing is standing up, speaking out, and working hard. Waiting and resting does not mean being wimpy and inactive. It means working and standing and speaking while waiting for the Lord to give results. Because it's going to be a long time, I think, before we see much result. Things are almost certainly going to get worse before they get better. And they could for you personally. Do you know that as the light shines brighter, the darkness fights harder? And you may think that you have suffered for being a Christian. I suspect that we haven't seen anything yet. That's my suspicion. And we got to be ready for that. And we've got to stand, and we've got to speak, and we've got to work while we wait with patience for the Lord to respond. Well, we're going to sing the song that Aubrey announced just a moment ago as an invitation song. And we do this for a couple of reasons. We might have in the audience this morning some who are not believers. You're not a Christian. You may or may not even know what I mean by that. You may not be familiar with the Bible or the church or Christianity or even Jesus, really, for that matter. And you're not a believer. Or maybe you know those things, but you've not committed to those things. So if you're not a believer, if you're not a Christian, this is an opportunity for you to think about your spiritual condition, where you stand, what you might need to do. Our hope is that you will make a determination during the song to do something about your spiritual condition and then reach out for help. If you are a Christian, maybe some of the things we talked about this morning are things that you're struggling with, or maybe not. Maybe you have an issue entirely unrelated to what we've talked about this morning, but you have an issue. And we're singing the song, and you're thinking about your condition, and you decide, I've got to do something. Continuing to put off action is only making things worse. I'm going to do something. And you decide to do that. So what we are making available to you is our help for whatever spiritual need you might have. If you're not a Christian, or if you are, and you decide to do something while we're singing the song, then we can talk privately after church, or you can come forward. You can sit on the front, we'll sit and talk together, see what's going on and what we can do to help. But this is an opportunity that we want to provide to you to let you know that we're here to help you, to make things right with God spiritually, if we can do anything for you. So I hope that you'll think about that, and I hope that you'll let us know after church, or you can come forward, take a seat on the front as we stand and sing together.